Bad Bad Boy. I've been binge neglecting my podcast, binge talking, but I'm back. I brought our producer Matt Onimus some flowers. Remember, white roses mixed with red means I miss you. That's where we're at right now. Very busy of late. Been doing lots of art. We're in Miami. We're in New York. But now I am turning my attention back to my beloved podcast. Today's guest, we got a cool guest lined up here. His name's Steven Juergensmeyer. He's a designer, creative director. He's worked in the music industry, creative field for his entire career. What we linked up on was he's working on an upcoming documentary called Sign of the Times. It's about those amazing billboards. This is something I actually sort of independently found, and then when we linked up, I realized we were talking about the same thing. Those amazing 1970s billboards on the Sunset Strip, which used to be sort of like the central part of the music industry. You had a big album coming out, the record company would put up a billboard, and the entire music world would see it, which at that point, prior to the internet, was basically limited to New York and the Sunset Strip. He's also fascinated by that. He's working on a documentary, and as we talked about it over the course of this interview, there's actually a lot more to it than I even anticipated, which makes it really interesting. It gets into the whole mix of art and commerce, online, analog, digital, how everything has changed so much from the days of the record company to MTV to streaming to the modern day. So without further ado, here is Steven Juergensmeyer.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
All right, Steven Juergensmeyer, hey, thanks for joining us on the phone today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Love your blog and happy to be part of it.
All right, great. So what drew me to you, I was sort of shown you by a friend of a friend, and I sort of dug into your work, and you've done some really amazing stuff. You're a graphic artist, creative director right now in Boston, and you have a background in art and music specifically. You've done some record covers, which don't even exist anymore, album cover art with some of the biggest artists around. Walk us through sort of your path, you know, what you do right now and the background in music and how that all evolved.
Yeah, sure thing. So I grew up in Miami in the 70s, which is not the Miami that it was today.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up to Boston to go to college, and I think it was the first weekend when I visited school here, I saw all these punk bands like the Neighborhoods and Mission of Burma and La Peste.
I used to work with Clint Conley from Mission of Burma.
Oh, yeah.
In Boston.
Yeah.
So what you were, yeah. From what you just said, you must have gone to BU and what? You were going to the Rathskeller and all that in Kenmore Square.
You got it.
Speaking
you
of things that are no longer anywhere close to what they were like in the 70s.
Sadly missed.
Yeah.
Sadly missed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, those bands blew my mind. You know, I you know, followed it from afar via Cream Magazine and Trouser Press as a teenager. And, you know, BU was definitely the best school I got into, and so I wanted to come. But the killer music scene did not hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I came up here and did everything you just talked about and tracked some amazing bands. You know, Amy Mann of Till Tuesday was working at the Newberry Comics counter.
Wow.
Checking out when people
Mass Ave and Newberry there. Street, right? Is that where that was?
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. I spent a fortune in there.
I remember my freshman year, I waited in line at midnight, which dates the story so much, for the second Pearl Jam album to come out, Verse, I think, or whatever it was, which is now, that's something like, you know, you tell that to a kid in college, you'd be like, I don't get it. What?
Yeah, exactly. What's an album and why am I waiting?
Right, why were you waiting outside to buy a physical ticket, piece of music?
A printed ticket. So you know, I came up here and did all that and worked a little bit in the advertising business for right out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And responded to an ad for a you know, an assistant graphic designer, art director at a little company called Ryko Disc, which was up in Salem. And you know, I lived and breathed music. I went in there and interviewed, and everybody there, which was only about six people there at the time,
mm-hmm.
were the same way. And it was one of the few jobs I left, and I said, I got that job. The next day they called, and I got that job.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the start. And you know, I've been doing things revolving around music since then. That was probably mid to, you know, 86, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent about 18 years there. They did some incredibly groundbreaking stuff with Frank Zappa and then the David Bowie CD catalogs and Elvis Costello and Yoko mm-hmm. Ono and
right, their niche is sort of like those retro box catalog type things, right? RICO?
Sort of. That's probably where they cut their bones, you mm-hmm. know, and they paid no, you know, no expense was spared for packaging. They did some really cool groundbreaking things. And they were a CD-only label at first, and then when the rest of the world went CD-only, they went vinyl, which was interesting. And then they, of course, had to grow their own artists, so bands like Morphine or Bob Mould and Sugar and those kinds of things. They
right.
started to do that because the majors all of a sudden realized their vaults were worth a lot of money.
Right. No, totally. And that was right. The move to vinyl is so fascinating. Everything eventually comes back where it started. I'm looking at your album covers now. You've got your website, StephenJurgensmeyer.com, and there's a link on there where you got something. I'm drawn to this Frank Zappa album cover, Strictly Commercial. It's so brilliant because it's this tight shot of him, and in the reflection of his glasses, you can see the camera light and the umbrella and everything. It's just like it's such a perfect commentary on selling out, being commercial, whatever it was. What was now? Were you actually at the shoot with him that day? And
No, that predates me. I mean, Frank had passed away probably my second or third year into the RICO disc. I forget
right,
the exact
yeah.
date. But you know, we had a chance to go through some of the vaults, and that was either Baron Woolman or Norman Seeff. I think it was Norman Seeff. But you know, we had a chance to just kind of look through their archives and. You know, that was, you know, I never really got what you just said in terms of the stars in his eyes kind of thing, but it's a very commercial, friendly side of Frank Zappa that you didn't really see too much.
Yeah.
He kind of pushed the envelope. And for greatest hits, if he's got those or if he had those, it seemed like the perfect choice, you know, and it looks like a greatest hits record, I guess. So
right.
Hopefully, job well done. You
know? It's just so perfect. It's so him. It's sort of like mocking the whole thing while embracing it. And
exactly.
Now the project you're working on right now is really interesting to me because I think I sort of stumbled upon it independently a while ago. You're working on a movie called, a documentary called Sign of the Times, which is on those great 70s billboards, specifically on Sunset Strip. You know, and it's such a great way to illustrate how far the music industry has fallen in a sense. You know, like back then there was massive budgets for these big outdoor campaigns and the billboards are just brilliant. So that's what this whole new project you're working on is all about, right?
Well, it is. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of things there we can go through. You know, in between kind of my stints at record labels, you know, I'm an avid reader. I mm-hmm. devour books that you've probably read that, you know, bands that I don't like Motley Crue, The Dirt.
I love The Dirt, Heroin Diaries, all of it.
Classic books.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and, you know, I just finished up one a little while ago on Tiny Tim. Now, you know, I don't particularly care for Tiny Tim, but it was a brilliant book.
Yeah.
So at some point, you know, I decided to follow that passion, and I did a website called All Music Books, and it's just a community site. Anybody can go there, allmusicbooks.com. We have about 8,000 books there and about 800 reviews. You can add your review. You can rate the reviews. And a friend of mine, who's a documentary filmmaker in L.A., done a lot of hip-hop things, and I did a side project for him on some movie titles. And he said, you know, I'd really like to do some rock and roll documentaries. Do you have any ideas? So I said, well, let me think about it. And as part of the All Music Books thing, I sometimes interview the authors with five questions. And there's a book called Rock and Roll Billboards at Sunset Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done by an Angeleno named Robert Landau. And when he was 16, he's walking around. His dad owned an art museum, and he's walking around with his Nikon. And he just sees these billboards, and then he notices they just kind of go away. So he starts taking pictures. So thankfully for him, he's got about 3,000 slides.
Wow.
And so I connected my friend and Robert, and then I got involved. And so, you know, this is something we're working on. And, you know, the amazing thing, a lot of people don't know, everybody knows these billboards, right? They're iconic.
Right.
If you grew up at a certain age. But even I didn't know this until Robert's book, is those things were built panel by panel and hand-painted by these artists who are looking at a photograph, and they're, you know, what, 30 feet high by 60
No, it's feet so high. It's so unbelievable. I know the amount of craft that went into it. Sometimes they were, like, replicating, you know, the cover of Exile on Main Street. Some of them were more esoteric, sort of, you know, pictures of the artist or whatever. But you can, I feel like you look at those old billboards, and nothing has transported me back in time. Like those pictures of the Sunset Strip, you can almost tell what year it is by the size of the cars, It's sort of like looking at old baseball cards, old baseball packs. You know, you can kind of like figure out what era it is just by the art because it's so of that moment. It's really incredible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and I would argue, you know, I mean, that's kind of the history of rock and roll. It's of a moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about that a little bit, and I did it in my book review where it's like, you know, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan or James Brown at the Apollo or, you know, any of those moments, they're permanently cast in your memory.
Mm-hmm.
But with these billboards, what I found so interesting and sad and beautiful, I guess, is that, you know, they were rented out for a month. And then when their lease was up, they took them apart, took them back to the warehouse and gasp, whitewashed over.
Oh,
gone for good.
Right.
Gone for good. Gone
right.
for history. So Robert has like 3,000 slides of these things. And
mm-hmm.
so I told my friend, I said, you know, I think there's a really cool story here. And he loved it from the get-go. And so, you know, that's what we're currently working on. And there's some incredible angles and stories.
No, his work's amazing. And like I love old photographers to, you know, people, not old, but people who were shooting before digital because... You know, there was the mystery of what was going to come out of your camera. You actually needed to sort of know the settings and all that. And the photos, right, they're not just like, you know, snapshots. They're beautiful art in and of themselves of the billboards, which were art too. That's crazy they whitewashed them. Like, it's so bad that there's, you know, there's not like a Vegas-style graveyard for all those old billboards or something like that,
well,
you know?
There's one.
There is.
One that we know of that... is a great story. There's a couple of little stories I'll tell you, but the one that we know of and we interviewed the guy is Abbey Road, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows Abbey Road, what that album cover looks like. And we interviewed the guy who designed the billboard, and what he did was die-cut the heads around the Beatles walking through the crosswalk. So when you went there, instead of seeing the sky on the album cover, you saw the sky of California behind
it. Oh,
right?
Wow.
And he talks about that in our film. Very interesting guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was the creative director at Capitol Records, then A&M Records. And, you know, of course, Abbey Road was the height of the Paula's Dead. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Right. As he had no shoes on covering the street, walking the street,
yeah.
Which meant he was dead.
And it said 28 If was on the Beatles, or on the Volkswagen Beetle license plate, and it would have been Paul's 28th birthday.
Oh, wow.
So,
I mean, look at all that mystery that we don't get now. Because there's no album cover art and everyone's sharing everything every second of the day on social media. Like even right there
exactly.
is a great insight into the how, the myth making they were able to get away with back when media was scarce, you know?
So here's where it gets interesting is, so one night this another Angelino turned 18 and he decided to, with a couple of friends, go up the billboard and cut Paul's head off the billboard.
Oh.
And he cut it off. And we have pictures before and after.
Yeah.
And we located the guy.
No.
And, yep, he's got, for all these years, he's got Paul's head hanging in his house.
Oh, my God.
And so.
And the head must be massive, right? Because, I mean, these billboards were huge, you know? Like Wow.
And it's funny because we mentioned that to the creative director, and he told us the story that, you know, the billboard company called him and said there's been some vandalism, and we're going to take care of it right away. We'll get it back up. And he said, okay, great. And then he said he was sitting in an advertising meeting, bored out of his skull.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, let me go look at it. And he goes out, drives out there, and says, you know what? Just leave it. It'll just give more power to the story of Paul.
Totally, right.
So he was like, you know, he embraced the, you know, the guy getting involved and giving it another angle.
Right, and I mean, it's interesting, too, even like, even to go further back, it's like, the idea that someone could climb a billboard on Sunset Strip, cut off this, you know, 5-foot-tall Paul McCartney head, and get away with it because everything wasn't on an HD security camera somewhere. Even that's a sign of the times. Like,
No doubt. No
unbelievable.
Doubt. And you know, we interview the guy, and he talks about that. He said, yeah, back then you could get away with that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's pretty funny, you know. So that is a remaining remnant. You know, I'm not sure of too many more. There's a couple of other cool stories if you got.
Yeah.
You want to hear them. Springsteen is another one, and we're going to try and get to him. And he's told this story live, but he was playing at the L.A. Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And after the show, he had seen his billboard, and it was for Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Yeah.
And he didn't like the way his face looked. So after the show, him and the entire E Street Band, a couple of beers, climb up there.
Oh, my
and,
God.
And he got up on Clarence Clemens' shoulders, and he was going to put a mustache on his face. But the billboards were so high that he couldn't reach from Clarence Clemens' shoulders to put a mustache on him. So they just spray painted all the way across the billboard, prove it all night.
Oh, wow. And,
it's
unbelievable.
This was a classic story.
Right. I mean, it was just such a, so much more of a lawless time, a free time in general. That's so crazy. And, you know, I was flipping through. You've got a trailer on Vimeo. How do people find it? It's Sign O Times. What is the URL
for
that?
The best place to go would be to our Twitter account, which is Sign O Times Movie.
Yeah.
And the Vimeo account is up if you go to ruggedentertainment.com, who's the company that's doing it. You can see the video there, and we're going to post another one that's a little bit longer soon. And also, you can see all the people we've interviewed, some amazing people. You know, Jack Holtzman, who founded Elektra Records.
Oh, wow.
Irving Azoff, who's like...
Oh, the Eagles. Yeah, that's like the biggest guy. He's Satan, but he's my Satan, right? That's the famous quote about him from Don Henley.
Well, you know, and you know, he talks a lot about that, you know, and... you know, there's Jerry Moss, who is the M in A&M Records.
Oh, wow.
We spoke to him. Cheap Trick, Rick Nielsen, who loves this project.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a couple of billboards, one for the Dream Police record.
Yeah, yeah.
We spoke to him. We spoke to Robbie Krieger of The Doors.
Oh, wow. Who also has a billboard. That's probably one of the first billboards, right? Because that was like 66 or something.
The very first.
Oh, no kidding. It is amazing, too, because I went to your Vimeo page. The link, and like I literally just scanned through it, you know, like scrolling one frame at a time, looking at all the different billboards and stuff. If you are interested in this sort of stuff, it is like the most fascinating thing on earth, because like I'm looking through and there's this crazy, you know, Rick James, House on Fire. I can't remember what the name of the album was, but it's like him looking insane, which is the greatest. But then like even in the background of the billboard, you see the Hyatt House, which was the Riot House, which was that, you know, famous LA. Like, that's the thing. It's like the billboards are amazing in and of themselves, but I love just looking in the background for the context clues about that period in time, which is fascinating in and of itself. You know, you can see the different businesses. You can see the Sunset Strip sort of highlights. All of that stuff through the years. Kiss Alive 2, which is a big one I saw.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them. Were like the Stones one for Exile, like you can see the different tour dates. Like I'm just sort of person who loves going in and sort of like investigating things like that. You can see like, oh, what year was this based on where they were playing, what venue?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It was definitely, you know, a calendar of you know, your favorite bands and where they were. And, you know, Jack Holtzman, who founded Elektra, and they did the first Billboards album. And, you know, he talks about that. They did that really to attract DJs to play play the Doors' first record. It was aimed at DJs because they're stuck in traffic on the LA freeway.
DJs who now have no control over their playlist whatsoever, if they still even exist. I mean, if they have a job, right? If there or if it's not one DJ doing 100 stations across the country from their ISDN line in their basement.
Exactly.
So much has changed, right? There was so much more human involvement in everything. I feel like.
Well, and Jack tells us that, you know, he was an indie label, and so this was his kind of missive to the world to say, we're here, we're in L.A. Most of the companies back then were based in New York. So for Jack, he said, we're based in L.A., we're here,
mm-hmm.
and here's our billboard. You know, and of course, you know, as you see through some of the ones you recount, every single major label followed suit.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And, you know, that's some of the things we investigate, like who got a billboard? Why did they get a billboard? Did they demand a billboard? Did they get pissy if they didn't get a billboard?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's so interesting too, because I was at a show, and I wound up talking to this guy who works for a major label now, and we were talking about, you know, being nimble and keeping your job in this, you know, shrinking industry. But he was also saying how like the, you know, the legacy acts who were there during the heyday of billboards and sort of big shows of support from the label, how it's a challenging conversation now to sort of convince an artist like we can do that, but it's actually a massive waste of money with little bang for the buck in return, as opposed to doing some other stuff that won't seem like a big deal to you, but will be much more effective, you know, like internet sales and, you know,
exactly.
Banner ads, Instagram, etc. It's like they have to educate the artist about the reality of the current biz.
Well, it's interesting. You're right on point about that, because there was a dip in the Billboard's popularity,
mm-hmm.
and that was all due to three little letters, and it starts with an M and ends with an
MP3,
MP3,
right?
MTV.
Oh, MTV. Oh, right.
Yeah, they're, you know, not widely acknowledged. There's a kind of two separate schools of thought, but a lot of people think that they kind of, you know, brought about the decline of the Billboards because you know, with the billboards, now we see them, but, you know, it's the people in L.A. on the Strip who's there at that particular month who saw them. And, you know, you can put a, you could back then, mid-'80s, early-'80s, you could put a video up on MTV for probably about the same kind of money and go worldwide.
Right.
So, you know, that caused a little bit of a decline, and I think we saw, like, Armani jeans and, you know, those kinds of things start to take over that area of the Strip, you know. Which it was, you know, I think most of us of a certain age, you think of Sunset Strip and you sort of think of rock and roll, whether it's the billboards,
right,
you know, the Whiskey a Go-Go, the Troubadour, those kind of clubs. So yeah, you know, the
Rainbow, Lemmy, right? All of that good stuff.
Yep, exactly. You know, and we actually, you know, we interviewed Robbie Krieger in the Rainbow.
Oh, I mean, that's
cool.
Every time I go to LA, like, I make, like, my wife will just stay home and I'll walk. Like, last time we were there, we were at a wedding and I was like 5 miles away and I walked to the Rainbow, went in, and then I walked across the street to where Lemmy had just died, but I walked to his old apartment on Clark Street. And I'm like, it's actually the craziest thing on earth because he literally did live like a 3 minute walk from the Rainbow, which is the funniest thing to me.
And I'm sure he was there almost every night.
every night at the slot machine. I mean, everyone would let him be.
Guy.
And yeah. That's
yeah,
so cool.
He was that guy, you know. I mean, it's interesting, you know, when you talk about, you know, kind of the new media and now, you know, you don't want to pay for that because that is the reality. A lot of times, you know, people don't know that the artist, it's in their clauses that, you know, they pay for the packaging deductions and those kinds of things. And they say, you know what, a manager or a lawyer may say, we can reach more people doing something else, even though this has this huge kind of hip, you know, quotient to it.
Right.
But, you know, it's interesting. You see today, you know, a lot of younger kids, you know, Target, I think, has brought out some kind of shirt line that has all these retro logos and album covers. And, you know, you see these kind of millennial Generation Z people really embracing that. So, you know, it's interesting, you know, to think about where it's going to go.
It does keep reinventing itself. Like, you'll see Kylie Kardashian in a Slayer shirt, and it's
exactly.
Like what?
I forgot what they did, but they ripped off somebody their logo.
Yeah,
logo.
I know what you're talking about.
They got in trouble for it.
Right, I know what you're talking about too. Right, yeah, I forget too.
It's funny. One of the books that I reviewed on my site for MTV, which is really really good, I couldn't remember the DJ or the VJ. I'm sorry, the VJ. It's called I Want My MTV. It's an uncensored history.
Oh, I read that book. Yeah, it's great.
By Craig Marks and Rob Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
It's like it's like 3 or 4 inches thick. It's huge.
No, totally. We're right.
It's
just everyone's
so
recollections of the MTV era and everything.
Yeah. But this one VJ, I had to steal it and put it in my review of the book because he said, "We, meaning MTV, are responsible for your kids having ADD. You're welcome." And I'm just like, that's exactly right, you know, in terms of so many things, you know. And I was talking about the new millennium and, you know, do these billboards that are just a glance and you know, and it just sears your brain, does that appeal to them, you know, because of that? You know, that generation is pretty brand savvy, you know, I think. So, you know, and you see it now, you know, the things that are hot and hip right now on the billboard are all the new tech companies. Spotify, I think last year they won the award for outdoor advertising for their billboards on Sunset Strip. You know, iTunes, they put up a billboard of the Beatles, of course, when they got their catalog, right?
Right.
So it still resonates, you know, but you've got Spotify, you've got, you know, all those streaming services, Netflix. And
right, YouTube, the whole, last time I was in LA, the whole Sunset Strip was all YouTube. You know, the fake YouTube celebs. They were the stars. It was interesting. You know, like, they were the Led Zeppelin of that moment.
Right. And, like, we might have, in our age group, you know, dreamed of being a member of Led Zeppelin or Kiss or pick your band. I'm not sure I've ever really dreamed of being that YouTube celeb.
I want to be Glozell Green, who wears the green lipstick. That's my, whoever that,
well,
that is
however
so
we can
wild.
Help, you know?
Right.
However we can help.
It is so temporary, but you got that stuff. It's so interesting. So when does the movie come out? Because, like, it's just funny because I was organically interested. I've seen this project. And I think, I saw the photos that because I think he's coming out with a book and he did a show in L.A. and he sells the prints of the guy Robert Landau who did the original photos. When does the movie come out? Because now, after hearing the pitch about what is in the movie, I can't wait to see it.
Well, we're still working on it. So we're shooting for spring of next year. It still kind of remains to be seen. You know, we're talking to several distributors, and, you know, what originally was an 80-minute doc may now have morphed into a three-part miniseries because that's what a lot of streaming companies prefer.
Right.
And, you know, if you really wanted to fully investigate, you know, the 50s of the strip, which had beer and Chevys and those kinds of things that morphed into rock and roll, into the things in the past 5 years, which are streaming service, if you really want to trace that arc, you could easily do it in a miniseries.
Right.
If you just want to focus on the classic rock of the time, you can do that too.
And what's like, logistically with that movie that you're putting together, the images themselves, you just have to get the permission from Landau, who shot those billboards, right?
So he's involved in the movie, and, you know, helping me. You know, we're writing it together. He may serve as kind of a voiceover bridge to some of the folks that we're filming. You know, it's an interesting story because there's so many great people out there that it's kind of hard to write a script because of the way that they tell the story, and so we're piecing it together to form, you know, a narrative through the words of all these people who are part of it. You know, the art directors, the photographers. You know, we just recently spoke to the set designer on James Taylor's tour, because James, at one point of this particular tour that he's on, unveils his debut album was on Apple Records.
Right.
And so he projects it behind him, and the crowd goes crazy. And so we spoke with her about why, you know.
Yeah.
And she was wonderful. You know, she told such a good story about how they came to get this, and you know. Interesting people just keep popping up, so it's one of those things. At some point, you got to say, "Okay, we got it."
And I mean, it's even crazy because Apple Music was like, Apple, which was the Beatles' record label, when Apple Computer came along, their deal was like, "All right, you can be Apple Computer, but you can't ever do music." And then they eventually did music, and then that became a whole other thing. Whenever they resolved that with iTunes,
right? I wonder if that had some bad blood with.
The Beatles, right. I mean, and streaming has been, I'm sure, like, if you're, you know, a lot of the marquee bands, you know, like AC/DC's, the Zeppelins of the world, who were actually still selling physical music, they were the last ones to go on board and get their 0.02 cents per spin, you know.
It's pretty sad.
Until they were forced to relent, basically, and now they're all on there.
Well, one of the guys that we spoke to who was super good. He was just a great interview. Is Peter Asher, who is the A&R director of Apple Records. So he told us about, you know, the first Beatles billboard, I believe, might have been Hey Jude when that single came out. And he talked a little bit about that. And then he went on to manage, you know, tons of people in L.A. But, you know, we were curious, like, do four guys from Liverpool, are they aware of the power of the billboards on Sunset Strip?
And right.
He's like, you know, I'm not sure if they were, but a lot of hip London, including, you know, some of their management, Neil Aspinall and those
were
completely aware of what was happening.
Right.
You know.
It is the most fascinating topic on earth because it touches on so many things that have changed, what things have stayed the same, what things are coming back in vogue. Amazing. Steve, I love this whole thing. So what's the final place we push people to be up to speed on you when we wrap this up here?
Well, if it's me, you know, allmusicbooks.com is something I manage, and I'd love for people. We do lots of book giveaways, and like I said, everything's free. You can read it for free. You can write for free. It's just a place, if you really love music and you love music books, please come. My name is my website, and I'm working on 3 albums right now. So, you know, I still do that in my spare time, but that is a dying art, sad to say.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, you look at the album covers and like how we grew up, you know, I just remember sitting in a room with friends with an album playing, and that 12-inch jacket made its way all around the room.
It was the most important thing ever, like that Appetite for Destruction album art. And the thing was great, too, like I remember still I'd buy things on cassette because that's where I was in that continuum of time, after records, before CDs.
Pre-CDs.
Yeah, when I was in junior high. And like I remember the Appetite tape thing, like it kept unrolling, and you know, had multiples, and I was like, this is the greatest, right, because the more information the better, because this was like seeing a dispatch from a foreign land, you know. It was like, oh my god, what is this, you know?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, we talk about the demise of of the LP, and it's grown back, come back a little bit, but it's more artist branding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think, you know, like now on your phone or whatever, it's what, a 1-inch by 1-inch little album cover. It's kind of hard to see the subtle details, you
right,
know?
The thumbnail.
I don't think anybody would pick out the Paul is Dead clues off of their phone. Let's put it that way.
No, I know. It's so true.
But on the flip side, you know, the world is changing, and most, not most, many of the folks that we interviewed, they all had kind of a similar feeling, you know, nothing lasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you said something that really rings true. It was in Robert's book, you know, talking about L.A. And, you know, Robert said L.A. is a city so hip that it has no time for nostalgia. And the Strip is constantly reinventing itself, as is music. You know?
Right.
You know,
right.
Now the money's not in record sales, sadly. It's in merch.
Merch, yeah.
You know, so we'll see where that all goes. But, you know, this is a very unique place and time, both music and culturally, you know, politically,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, all the good stuff, it seems to me, you probably would agree with this, but, you know, where you can capture all of those things in one thing, you know, whether it be art, music, culture. And I think this film's got all those things.
Right. In a period of time that people are very fascinated by, maybe as a reaction to whatever time we're living in right now, that's for sure. Steven,
exactly right.
Amazing. We look forward to the movie. We'll have to talk more when that actually comes out, but I really look forward to it. It sounds so cool. Keep up the good work, and thanks for talking to us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your support, and you keep up doing what you do. Everybody should listen to those. You know, I particularly like the, I think it's the Weiss guy.
Oh, I love Weiss guy. That's my bro. Yeah.
That was brilliant, so congrats to you as well.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it. See ya. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, at Stephen Lacy with a V, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, STEVELACY. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.